from your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 14 years now at the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kick, and welcome to this month's edition of Roaring Truth with my favorite roarer besides myself, Jim Fetzer. I'm sure we got plenty to roar about today. Good morning, Jim.
Oh, Maria, it's just great to be on with you again. It's unbelievable as we approach the 50th observance of the assassination of JFK, how much rubbish there is out there. But I know we want to begin with other stories and work back to that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, there's so much going on. You know, I mean, you look at the world and, you know, this whole thing with the Iranian meetings, nobody seems to be really talking about it. And I got an article this morning from Robert Parry where he's talking about the Saudi-Israeli alliance and how they pressured France pretty much to squash those talks they had with Iran.
I'm very disappointed in France, yes, because this meeting was so positive. It had so many important developments. The Iranians were being very open and cooperative, and it looked as though the P5+1 was going to meet on some common ground here until France pivoted and aborted. Evidently, I think Perry's right, under pressure from the Saudis and the Israelis. It's really shocking, Maria, because Iran has not attacked any other nation for 300 years. Iran has disavowed any nuclear weapons program. Its policy is nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. It's signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's allowed inspectors. Israel, on the other hand, has 200 to 600 of these little beauties, vast arsenals of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons, and no one ever talks about Israel, which is the real source of the problems of the in the Middle East. If all those countries had nuclear weapons, there wouldn't be a problem.
Hey, I totally agree, and I find it interesting that, you know, Israel and the Saudis have tossed their cookies together, and once again, Bandar Bush in the mix. He always seems to be in the mix. Good old George Bush's friend, Bandar, whatever the hell his real name is. I'm so used to calling him Bandar Bush.
You're so right, Maria, because it appears that he was responsible for providing those chemical weapons to the rebels that were used just as the UN inspection team was about to arrive when the Syrian army had the rebels on the run, and there would have been no rational reason for the Assad government to have deployed them, but every reason for the rebels or those who are opposed to the Assad government to have used them to, in an attempt to embarrass the government. I was so proud of the American people that we didn't fall for Obama's plan to drop cruise missiles into Syria in order to ostensibly uphold international law, when in fact in the process he would have been violating international law, the UN Charter, and even the US Constitution, which connects us by treaty to the UN, where Article 6 grants treaties the same status under the Constitution as the Constitution itself. Good for the American people, even when they were being bombarded with exaggerated figures about how many had died. Syria poses no imminent threat. The U.S. had no approval from the Security Council. I say, for a change, the American people were alert and on top of this, and by a margin of about 90%, we stop that dead in its tracks.
Absolutely. You know, you also had sent me an article on the Stuxnet virus, which, you know, Israel and the United States have used on other countries, and a lot of people postulated it was used at Fukushima.
And Fukushima is just absolutely dreadful. I mean, this is turning out to be one of the greatest catastrophes of human history. And a late report suggests that that Netanyahu, that Israel may have used it against Russia. I think Netanyahu is very unhappy with Putin because of the intervention of Russia in relation to the Syrian situation, where Putin sent 100 pages of documentation showing that, in fact, it was the rebels who'd used the gas and not the Syrians. Netanyahu, of course, has launched another attack, even after Putin advised him not to do it, on Russian missiles that have been sent to Syria. I predict there's going to be a retaliation for that, Maria, and Netanyahu is not going to be a happy camper.
Well, he's not a happy camper at all these days, because it seems that he's lost his control over Obama.
Yeah, that's the most positive development I've seen from this administration, and in maybe its entire history. That is positive. I'm convinced that Petraeus was taken out because Israel had all this raw data from the NSA and knew that he was having this dalliance with his biographer. I mean, no one in Washington would bat an eye over that ordinarily. If you took out everyone in Congress who would have some sort of trifle like that, the halls of the Capitol would be empty. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he had concluded that Israel was a strategic liability to the United States, I think that is what precipitated this. And that as long as Israel continues to receive the NSA raw data, we can expect it's going to continue to pressure our own politicians and political leaders to act in accordance with Israel's best interests, not the United States.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've been paying the price for that for how many decades? You know, I had a story this week where the United States and Israel got kicked out of UNESCO at the UN because we've refused to pay our fees for 2 years because of the UN granting Palestine statehood. And you look at that and you look at our record at the UN, we've always voted against the whole world in favor of Israel. When you look at all the votes, you know, we're always the ones that block everything.
Well, you're so right, Maria, and I think it's justifiable that the United States has lost its role as the moral leader of the world, and it looks as though our role as the financial leader of the world is rapidly slipping from our grasp. That, you know, the creation of the new BRICS organization with Brazil, China, Russia, India, South Africa creating their own alternative to the World Bank is already making a great impact. And, of course, we know that nations like Libya and Iraq and even Iran have been targeted in part because they went off the petrodollar and began to trade in other currencies, which I believe means that the role of the petrodollar in propping up the American financial system is coming to an end.
Mm. Well, you know, it's interesting because I watched a movie the other night I hadn't seen. It was called Olympus Is Down. I don't know if you've seen it. But it's basically an attack on the White House, and it's, of course, it's by, you know, some wild faction, I want to say in North Korea or China. But I looked at it and I said to myself, but, you know, these are the new enemies of America. I'm reading so many stories about China and China talking about a new one world order. People saying China is going to be the next superpower on the block. Everybody wants to de-Americanize. Did you ever think when we were kids, Jim, that our country would turn into this?
Oh, Maria, the United States has proven to be such a disappointment in our lifetime. It's staggering. I was born a year and a day before Pearl Harbor, and, you know, I grew up in a world where the United States was the moral and political champion of the world, that we stood up for human rights and for the sovereignty of other nations, and I've seen a steady deterioration and decay where we no longer are respected and admired, but now are despised and reviled along with Israel as the two most aggressor nations in the world and the least admirable of all.
Right. Well, you know, when people, you know, even after 9/11, not too long after 9/11, people in Europe were asked, you know, what do you consider the scariest threat on the planet? And many of them polled said the United States.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, Obama has sent American troops into 17 nations in Africa alone. You mentioned 9/11. That's a very interesting because Science Daily has just had a report about kidney damage in first responders that has been linked to 9/11. And kidney damage is hardly the only kind of ailment that has accrued there. In fact, multiple myeloma in the general population is relatively rare, but it was like triple among first responders. Unusual cancers like non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia, thyroid, pancreatic, brain, prostate, esophageal, blood and plasma cancers. These are all very indicative of the use of nuclear weapons on 9/11, Maria, which was reinforced, has been reinforced dramatically by the U.S. Geological Survey's extensive dust samples taken all over many different locations, which revealed barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, and tritium. I mean, the American people have to face up to the fact that the evidence shows that a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes was used to take down the Twin Towers, that the buildings were loaded with asbestos, that the owner took possession of them in order to destroy them and cash in on an insurance policy. We're on an investment of $114 million. He gained back over $4.4 billion by having a terrorist attack clause claiming two planes meant a double indemnity. Mm. It's just shocking how the American people have been bamboozled over 9/11, Maria. In fact, I have an article out there entitled 9/11, Have We Been Bamboozled? That I'd recommend anyone who has any doubts about this should take a look.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and looking at that article you had sent me on the kidney damage and cancers, you know, when I saw, you know, I looked through, you know, the elements they found in the dust samples. First of all, barium and strontium. Those are two of the elements in the chemtrails. Okay. So I said, okay, maybe that's from the sky because they're spraying chemtrails all the time. It's barium, strontium, and aluminum are the main ingredients of that poison soup. But when you look at lithium, you look at chromium and tritium, okay, you've got a whole lot of tritium pouring out of Fukushima right now. There's 300 tons of radioactive water flowing out of that thing every day now for 2 years. And the cancer, especially thyroid cancer rates amongst the kids in Japan, is off the charts.
Oh, it's very scary. And all that is coming to the west coast of the United States and sweeping across the country. I mean, there are going to be untold effects here. They're going to take a while to show up, but it's going to be devastating, Maria.
Absolutely. Well, you know, NOAA yesterday put out a report saying that there is no garbage from Fukushima in the Pacific. They said there isn't any, even though for months people in California and along the West Coast have been picking out the garbage off their beaches. You know, our federal alphabet agencies always want to tell us everything is okay. And that's the same thing, if you recall, Christy Whitman with the EPA said, like 2 days after 9/11, come back to New York, the air is clean.
Yeah, that was preposterous then. And, of course, what's going on in Fukushima and the residue here is absolutely staggering. I can't believe that anyone continues to take seriously anything the government tells us about our health, the environment, or politics, for that matter. It's a very creepy situation where we have more good reasons to distrust our government than we have to believe it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, my slogan's been, the government is guilty until they prove themselves innocent. Well, I mean, isn't that what they do to us in court now? You have to prove your innocence. You're not assumed innocent anymore.
Well, it is absolutely incredible, Maria, to the extent to which there's been an inversion of the Constitution. And in fact, Obama's been signing so many executive orders, you wonder if there's any of it left yet. I mean, the passage of the Patriot Act was, of course, completely outrageous, where even James Sensenbrenner, who's a representative from Wisconsin, where I reside, has concluded that enough is enough and is proposing legislation to roll back the NSA's massive surveillance. But whether it'll happen or not is an open question. When they know everything there is to know about everybody, Maria, they have a complete control over the course of events because they can subject pressure on anyone, threats, extortion. It's staggering, and that extends into the economic realm, too, which is part of the reason why some of the European nations are becoming upset, including Chancellor Merkel of Germany, who actually grew up in East Germany and knew the power of the Stasi, widely regarded as the most efficient secret police organization ever created, and after which our own Department of Homeland Security was modeled.
Right. Well, we live in interesting times. I see John McCain is calling for the big top guy, Alexander over at the NSA to be fired.
Well, that's appropriate. I mean, Alexander and Clapper have been lying to Congress from the beginning. It's completely shocking. No one should suppose that this surveillance program was related to 9/11 either, because in fact it was instituted in February, just about the first act done by the Bush-Cheney administration, 7 months before 9/11 took place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, this was a program that was obviously on the Bush-Cheney agenda before they actually were even sworn into office.
Absolutely. Well, kind of like the war in Iraq, too. Or as Dumsfeld would say, all things related and not related. I mean, we've been bullshitted too all our lives. You know, it's really something when you think about it, that everything we ever thought was true was not true. And, you know, I know we have a lot of stuff we want to talk about, but I have to say this, okay? It doesn't seem that when you look at, especially on the 50th anniversary, the murder in broad daylight of our president, it wasn't enough to just assassinate JFK. They have continuously assassinated his character ever since. Now, you know that was the biggest coup d'etat on our government that we will ever see when they took him out.
Well, you're so right, Maria. I mean, they say he didn't accomplish all that much, but the fact is he was taken out because he had big plans. He was not going to go into Vietnam. He was going to pull our forces out. Imagine what a difference that would have made. He was going to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. He'd already directed the Pentagon to supervise any paramilitary activities by the agency that upset them both. He was cracking down on organized crime for the first time in his history, most aggressively, bringing more prosecutions and convictions than ever before in history. The mob didn't like that. He had instructed the Department of the Treasury to print United States notes rather than Federal Reserve notes on the ground that the paying interest to a consortium of private banks to print the currency of the United States made no sense at all. He was going to cut the oil depletion allowance for the Texas oilmen, which they regarded as akin to their divine right. They stopped him from doing all of these things by killing him. It's very well described in the book by James Douglas, JFK and the Unspeakable.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
How he antagonized all these powerful interest groups, Maria, and then by Phil Nelson, LBJ mastermind of JFK's assassination, what they did about it. And where there's a new book by Roger Stone entitled The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, where I just interviewed him on my show, and it's a really fine read.
Oh, you know, you remember when I got the book by Roger Stone's publicist, I wrote you and said, have you heard of this guy and should I read this book? And you said, absolutely. Well, I have him booked actually for the 27th of this month. I have to tell you, his book is phenomenal. I mean, it takes Barr McClellan's book out into the ethers. You know, I had interviewed Barr McClellan when Bush was president. And at that time, both his sons were working for the Bush administration. And as famous as Barr McClellan was as one of LBJ's attorneys, no one would touch him or his book, not on TV, not on radio. So I was very happy to get him on my show, but he did not want to mention his connection to his sons because he didn't want to get them in trouble.
Yes.
Job-wise. But, you know, when you look at Roger Stone's book, man, this guy was the ultimate insider. I mean, it's like he worked for everybody from Nixon to Reagan to you name it. It's a pretty juicy book, which, of course, confirms my first impression at 13 years old that Johnson was behind it.
Well, you were right on top of it. You were precocious even then, Maria. You understood what was going on. And I think it's because he's an insider politically and to the right on the conservative or GOP side, that this book is going to make a difference. People cannot dismiss him as a conspiracy theorist when the man is a political realist and knows Washington inside out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, for some reason, his publicist ended up sending me two copies of the book. So I took the extra copy over to one of my best friends, right? And he had just finished reading Jesse Ventura's book, They Killed Our President.
Yeah.
And he said to me, I don't want to read another Kennedy book, because I gave him Me and Lee by Judith Baker. And he was blown away. So I said, well, look, I'm just going to leave it on your counter. If you get in the mood, start reading it, right? So when he started reading it, he was as repulsed by the facts, even just the personal facts of just how dirty and repulsive a man Lyndon Johnson was.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, my God, why'd you get me started on this book? And he can't put it down.
I think that's great.
So, you know, I tend to always like to flip my books around to my friends, because it gets them something to think about and gives us some damn good stuff to have conversations on.
Yes.
And that's really why I do this show, you know, for the benefit of everybody listening. You know, you mentioned JFK and the Unspeakable. I interviewed him, you know, years ago, as soon as the book came out. And people don't understand. They're like, Maria, why don't you let it go? You know, it was 50 years ago. That's like saying, why don't you let 9/11 go, when we're living in a police state that Hitler would have been proud of?
Well, we had a whole succession of presidents who would never have occupied that office but for the death of JFK. It was really a throwback to earlier times. Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, George Herbert Walker Bush, and then, of course, W., who would never have occupied that office had his father not already preceded him. And the first four of those presidents were all involved in the assassination of JFK in one capacity or another. It's truly shocking when you get deep down into it.
Right. Well, you know, I started telling all my friends, I said, pay attention to the media. Pay attention to the shitty movies they're going to replay on TV. The stories in the newspapers, and how they're going to come and reinforce the official story, because that's what they do with 9/11 over and over again. And sure enough, everywhere you look, the single bullet theory is out there again. It was just Lee Harvey Oswald, even though that was proven in court that it was a conspiracy, what, in the 70s? And, you know, it's the same old crap, and I'm looking at it, and it really insults my intelligence, but I expect it from them. They have to continually brainwash us into believing these ridiculous stories, everything from, you know, JFK to 9/11 to Sandy Hook to the shooter at that mall in New Jersey who turned out to be a crisis actor. I mean, this is constant. It never ends.
Well, Maria, you're so right about the magic bullet theory being endlessly repeated. I have just published this morning, just before coming on with you, an article about how CBS This Morning featured a father-son team who claimed that they had shown that the magic bullet theory was defensible. And they did it by modeling the neck using a block of soap and claiming that that was an appropriate representation of the muscles of the neck. But the fact is, they completely omitted that JFK had a spine. I mean, there are cervical vertebrae that intervene.
Right.
We have known for, you know, about since, 1998 at least, that the magic bullet theory is anatomically impossible, because cervical vertebrae intervene. We have the shirt he was wearing, the jacket he was wearing. We have the autopsy report, the FBI sketch. We have the president's personal physician's death certificate. They all locate that wound to the back, 5.5 inches below the collar and to the right of the spinal column, Maria. I mean, it's preposterous, you know, that anyone would think the magic bullet theory could be salvaged at this late day and time. So there it is. Go to Veterans Today. Check it out. I published, I actually presented an article, a talk, a lecture at Cambridge in 2007 that was then published in a peer-reviewed, international peer-reviewed journal explaining all the evidence that refutes the magic bullet theory, where Michael Batten, MD, was the head of the HSCA medical panel that observed that if the magic bullet theory were false, then there had to have been at least six shots from three different directions.
Right.
The magic bullet theory is false. And JFK himself was hit four times. He was hit in the throat from in front, in the back, the wound I've already described from behind, and then after the driver, William Greer, pulled the limousine to the left and to a halt, he was hit in the back of the head. He fell forward. Jackie eased him back and was looking him right in the face when he was hit in the right temple by a frangible or exploding bullet that set up shockwaves that blew his brains out the back of his already weakened cranium with such force that when they hit Officer Bobby Hargis riding there, he initially thought he himself had been shot. Then, of course, there was a bullet that missed and injured James Tague. That's number five, at least one to John Connolly. That's number six. Mm-hmm. There were at least two other shots that missed. That would be 7, 8, and Connolly may have been hit by two more.
Right.
That would be means 8, 9, or 10 shots were fired altogether. I mean, it's just rubbish that we're getting all this nonsense in 2013, Maria.
I know. It's crazy. It's totally crazy. You know, when I read that article you sent me on these Haig brothers, I guess that's their name, and I was reading what they had to say. I have to tell you, it was everything I could do not to just laugh aloud. I like to read a little of what they said, especially after reading Roger Stone's book, where he said many times, you know, that he's, you know, talked to John Connolly. John Connolly had admitted that he was shot by separate bullets, okay?
That's right.
He said there were at least four bullets that he could count happening. And yet these two, you know, Yutz brothers, Dumb and Dumber, Luke and Michael Haig, whoever the frick they are, when I read this, look, I'm a girl. I'm not a ballistic expert by any means. But when I'm reading this, I was like, are they joking? So I want to just read it so the audience can have a chuckle. Luke explains, it's like a badly thrown football. It normally flies true and straight. But when the bullet emerged from Kennedy, it's now yawing and tumbling. Okay, that cracked me up right there. Then he said that the entry wound in Connolly is important because it's the consequence of a yawed bullet. So it had to be a destabilizing bullet from somewhere. And then he goes on to say that they weren't really tough shots. Okay, if it was one bullet, why is he saying they aren't really tough shots? And then he goes on to say, asked if he believes it was just one bullet, Michael Haig says, as far as the neck wounds to the president and the wounds to John Connolly, absolutely. Well, not according to John Connolly.
Well, it's incredible. You're right. Connolly heard something happening with JFK, turned to his right, couldn't see it, so he turned back to his left, and that's when he felt his chest doubling up. That shot appears to have been fired from the west side of the book depository by Malcolm Mack Wallace, Lyndon Johnson's personal hitman, in the false belief that he was firing at Ralph Yarborough, the liberal Texas senator that LBJ despised. He had a big argument with JFK that morning, trying to get Yarborough in with JFK and then Connolly out, but where Jack overrode him on the ground that the chief executive of the state should ride with the chief executive of the United States. Mack Wallace, by the way, murdered a dozen people for Lyndon Johnson, including one of his own sisters.
Right. Well, didn't they want Yarborough in that car with Kennedy instead of Connolly?
Exactly, exactly. And that's why when Mack was firing, he was firing in the mistaken belief that it was Yarborough, because Lyndon was unsuccessful in talking JFK into making the switch. And there wasn't time to let the assassins know that it would be Connolly instead of Yarborough, which actually benefited the cover-up, Marie, because it obfuscated the politics of this. It was actually, you know, the military industrial intelligence community that was responsible here for taking him out so that he wouldn't, you know, be able to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces or end the war in Vietnam or get the Fed out of business by publishing United States notes. I mean, there were a host of issues. If he'd only lived, this nation would have been on such a more healthy, progressive trajectory. It's really shocking and terribly sad to think about.
Well, because we're not a nation that wants peace, at least not our leaders, because we're a war nation. You know, we've been at war since I was born, since before I was born, and we still are. So it's like, when does it end? What I was surprised at, and I don't know, you may have known that, but you know, everybody's book always shows me something that I didn't know before. Johnson sitting in the back of his limo, a few limos behind Kennedy. According to Roger Stone, he dropped to the floor seconds before the first shot was fired.
Well, this is a controversial question because there's some images of the Alton's where it looks as though his face has been blacked out for whatever reason. There wasn't a lot of room there on the floor. Lyndon Johnson was a big guy. Mm-hmm. Ralph Yarborough talked about how Lyndon claimed that his Secret Service man, Rufus Youngblood, had leapt over from the front seat to the back to protect him. That was complete rubbish. Nothing like that happened. Nevertheless, Lyndon had Rufus Youngblood into the White House and gave him, you know, a presidential medal, a citation for valor. Youngblood, you know, not knowing what else to do, accepted it. But it's quite obvious nothing like that happened.
Mm-hmm. And there really wasn't any rush for Lyndon Johnson to get sworn in like he did. That was like high drama that day.
Oh, right. And even falsely claimed that Bobby Kennedy said it should be done. That was to delay the takeoff of Air Force One so they could get the body out of the casket, which had already been brought aboard, and into a body bag, which was then stowed in a secret compartment. So when they arrived at Andrews Air Force Base, it could be offloaded and flown by helicopter, apparently to Walter Reed, to remove bullet fragments because the different shooters used different calibers of bullets, and it wouldn't have done to allow any of different caliber than a man like Carcano to have turned up. And then the body was taken in a pinkish gray shipping casket over to Bethesda in a black hearse, where Gerald Custer, who was the x-ray technician who actually took the x-rays, told me how he was heading upstairs with x-rays of JFK that needed to be developed when he looked out the window and saw the huge entourage with a gray Navy ambulance pulling up in front of Bethesda Naval Hospital and Jackie Kennedy walking in, which he thought was very strange since the president's body was already present in the morgue.
Right. Well, you know, I was a little surprised to find out that the illustrious and almost invisible Jack Ruby was also at Parkland Hospital spying around, and a couple of times tried to get into the police station a little earlier than when he did go in and blow away Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, Jack Ruby had a much larger role here than is generally acknowledged. Judith realized only later after she saw him shoot Lee that she actually knew him. She'd met him as Sparky Rubenstein in New Orleans when she was working with David Ferry and Mary Sherman on this rapid acting cancer where Lee was assisting them. This is where David Ferry got so interested and involved in research on mice. They eventually worked up to monkeys to test them on, you know, primates that are more closely related to humans than mice. But she actually realized belatedly that she knew this man. Mm-hmm. And of course, it turns out that he worked for Richard Nixon when Nixon was on the House Un-American Activities Committee. He'd hired him at the recommendation of Lyndon Johnson. When Nixon saw the shooting, you know, as Roger Stone reports, he went white and turned to his aide and said, "I know that man."
Right. Well, Nixon knew a whole lot more. And he wanted to know a whole lot more on the Kennedy assassination. And I remember at one point he said that the difference between him and LBJ was he didn't want to be president enough to kill for it.
Right. They both wanted to be president, but
right.
He wasn't willing to kill for it.
Right.
Except he does appear to have been present at the Murchison ratification meeting the night before, where Madeline Duncan Brown, who was one of Lyndon's mistresses with whom he began an affair in 1948. She bore him a son, Stephen, in 1950. She attended the meeting, and J. Edgar Hoover was there. Richard Nixon was there. She remembered he was driven out by a local Republican leader who worked in the same bank building where she was a young advertising executive. George Brown, Brown and Root Heavy Construction, was there. When the Vietnam War went down, Brown and Root got $1 billion to dredge a new port at Cam Ranh Bay,
right,
even though Vietnam has many magnificent natural ports, and I'm sure they didn't need one. John J. McCloy, our former High Commissioner to Germany and former CEO of Chase Manhattan Bank, was there. And would you believe, Maria, that when Lyndon constituted the Warren Commission, he made John J. McCloy, who actually been present at the ratification meeting at the Murchison's the night before, a member of the commission, along with Alan Dulles, whom whom JFK had removed as director of the CIA. Shocking.
Right. It's just crazy. Jim, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, of course, we'll be continuing this. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Can you imagine the work and preparation that goes into producing and hosting a radio show 4 days a week? 14 years and still keeping it fresh and informative? Maria does it and does it well. Did you know Maria also has a huge online presence and dedicates time each day to inform her friends on social media? Check her out on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and YouTube. Maria is easy to find. She uses her real name everywhere, Maria Heller. Let's create a world of our own choice and vision by joining together to support those who support truth. If you aren't subscribed to her show, select a subscription of your choice on her site at maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A.net. And join the informed, happy group of listeners. You are never alone. Now let's get back to this fabulous show.
Okay, welcome back to Roaring Truth with myself and my co-host, Jim Fetzer. Get over to veteranstoday.com. Jim is a prolific writer there. Actually, Jim, I think the very first time I interviewed you, God, it's got to be a dozen years ago, was when you sent me your books on Kennedy and the Kennedy assassination.
That might well be, Maria. I mean, those books have made a real difference. I mean, the first one, Assassination Science, involved the studies of the X-ray by David W. Mantic, MD, PhD, that showed the official autopsy X-rays in the National Archives had been altered to conceal that massive blowout at the back of the head, and reports from Robert Livingston, MD, who was a world authority on the human brain and an expert on wound ballistics, who had compared the multiple consistent reports from the physicians at Parkland of extruding cerebral and cerebellar tissues from the back of that massive wound in the back of his head, and with the brain shown in diagrams and photographs at the National Archive, which show a virtually completely intact brain, including a cerebellum with no damage at all, and concluded quite reasonably that these cannot be diagrams and photographs of the brain of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Now, you or I might have drawn that inference, Maria, but it's nice to come from a world authority on the human brain. And, of course, there and in the other two books I published, Murder in Dealey Plaza and then in 2000 in the Great Zapruder Film Hoax 2003, where all three, by the way, are going to become available as online as e-books, Maria. I'm very pleased
to
say.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
That the Zapruder film has been massively reconstructed because they had to remove William Greer pulling the limousine to the left and to a halt to make sure JFK would be killed because it was such a glaring indication of Secret Service complicity in setting him up for the hit.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Roger Stone doesn't leave any of that out in his book, The Missing Frames and the Zapruder film. He talks about the original doctors at Parkland, you know, who said, you know, how the shot really happened originally. Talks about the fact of the doctors shredding their paperwork on the President of the United States. You know, it reminded me on 9/11 when you had, what the hell is that agency? The FAA, where the guy destroyed the tapes on 9/11 because he didn't think they were important.
He knew how important they were. Those are all the oral reports coming from the air traffic controllers. He recorded them, and he claimed he did so because it had been illegal to record them. How absurd is that? He actually cut them up into hundreds of little tiny pieces and distributed them in multiple different trash receptacles. It's that bad, Maria.
Right, but he did it by accident. It's always by accident. I think these people all live because of an accident of birth.
Right.
Right. So it's interesting to see. Now you have, I think I sent you the story. It was kind of funny. I sent you a story yesterday. You sent me the same story today. But I know it's hard to keep track of what we read and what we don't read. But speaking about what we read, what do you think about the fact of the way that they're changing textbooks to make Kennedy look bad or, you know, less larger than life?
Yeah, it's shocking. Of course, Texas plays a very important role in high school textbooks because it's such a large state, and it's determined by their state board of education. And if they, you know, want to spin things one way or another, textbook publishers don't want to publish two editions, so they'll tend to go with the most conservative that's going to be most widely adopted. And it's hardly surprising that Texans and other historians might want to minimize JFK for the sake of, you know, what they may perceive to be the greater good of the community. Most of it is based upon, you know, the fact that he didn't accomplish all that he was set out to accomplish, which are the very reasons why he was assassinated that I've been describing. I mean, you have to give the man credit for having tremendous backbone. You know, it's so funny that these accounts of the magic bullet ignore the fact that he had backbone, but he had a backbone both literally and figuratively. Mm-hmm. I mean, a man who's going to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, a man who's going to end the war, bring our forces back from Vietnam, a man who's going to abolish the Fed, a man who's going to cut the oil depletion allowance, a man who's cracking down on organized crime. He was doing all those things.
Right, and he didn't. Lyndon, right.
And once Lyndon Johnson acceded to the presidency, it all ended, Maria. It all ended.
Absolutely. And then Israel got their nukes, you know. The war in Vietnam continued eternally. You know, the oil guys got their money. I mean, everybody was happy. In the, one of the articles I sent you on textbooks being changed, and I'm not surprised, it says that the people pretty much that still regard Kennedy well are people ages 43 to 63, and there's a reason for that. Most of us were alive when it happened. We lived through Kennedy.
Right.
But
right.
They're saying, according to a New York Times poll, they now rank him fourth, with 10% standing, putting him behind Ronald Reagan, Lincoln, and Bill Clinton, saying I remember Bill Clinton. I mean, he pretty much ran his campaign as the new Kennedy. He was so, you know, excited over,
yeah,
you know, JFK.
Yeah. And he'd actually met JFK when he was a young man.
Right. So now we're supposed to believe JFK is trailing Ronald Reagan, that loser. I'm like, what?
Ronald Reagan received the most favorable publicity of any incompetent president in the history of the United States. I mean, he did tremendous damage to the United States, the supply-side economics, and he just let the federal deficit run completely out of control as a gimmick in order to create the impression that we had to cut the Social Security network if we were going to balance the budget. He was a really wonderful guy in the persona he projected, but he was a really terrible president.
Please, he was always the B actor, and I thought he was less than a B president. And when I read these articles, revisionist history, which is all you can call it, you know, people that didn't live through it, you know, I guess history doesn't just belong to the victors, it belongs to who's writing it.
Well, that's a nice point, and the New York Times has been taking a leading role here with article after article that's denigrating JFK, so it's not a bad enough that he was assassinated. Now they have to assassinate his character. I noticed one article from the New York Times entitled, "Lee Harvey Oswald Was My Friend," that is authored by the son of a man who had known Marina by being a translator. The author of the article is Peter Paul Gregory, and we do a research on it. It states baldly that he works for the CIA. How bad is that?
Are you surprised? Were you surprised by that?
William Colby told us that the CIA owns everyone of significance in the major media. You just don't expect it to be quite this blatant.
Right, exactly. And, you know, his address is very clear. CIA, Arlington, Virginia, Peter Paul Gregory. And he was friends with Lee Harvey. You know, the more, especially after reading Judith Baker's book, the more I realized that Lee Harvey Oswald was set up as a patsy in more ways than even he probably knew.
Oh, I think that's exactly right. You know, before we have to conclude our conversation, Maria, I want to point out that there are new developments with regard to Sandy Hook. Not only was there a gag order imposed upon all the workers who have been involved in tearing down the school,
mm-hmm.
which I'm confident was so they wouldn't report the absence of any bloodstains or pockmarks in the walls from the alleged bullet holes, not only did the Newtown clerk make special arrangements with the state legislature to not release death certificates on the children, but now in Sandy Hook, they're arguing that the 9/11 calls should not be released. This is completely ridiculous. a judge is going to review them in the first place. But the fact is, the evidence is overwhelming that no children actually died at Sandy Hook. I've been part of a small research group, including Sophia Smallstorm, Jenny Lake, James Tracy, Kelly from Omaha. And Sophia has now put together a masterful piece on unraveling Sandy Hook. It runs about an hour and a half. I recommend everyone track it down. And a couple of our discoveries, Maria, included that there were photographs of these children that were posted online before the event. When you study their clothing, it's completely out of date. It appears to have been about 20 years earlier. We even have a photograph of Neil Helson testifying about his son Jesse, showing a huge frame photograph mm-hmm. when Jesse was 6 months old, which means since Jesse was allegedly killed when he was six, that would be like 5.5 years earlier. And yet if you compare the photograph, the image of Neil Helson with his appearance
yeah.
in Congress holding this photograph, he appears to be at least 20 years older.
Absolutely.
And that's what appears to have happened, Maria. They used photographs of children that were 20 years out of date. We
right.
even have discovered a YouTube video where one of them, James Mattioli, attended his own funeral. If you compare the photographs of him as the alleged victim, he's about 20 years older and he's attending his own funeral. It's that bad.
Well, you know what I found? I did watch most of it last night, and I'll put a link here so people can go in and see it for themselves, make up your own mind, is when she started exposing Newtown, why people moved there, the kind of people that worked there, and there's a yeah. lot of military, a lot of CIA, et cetera, living there. And the first thing I thought about, and I don't even know if you're familiar with it, but one of my other co-hosts, Dave McGowan's done a tremendous, stories on Laurel Canyon in California and how many yeah. of the groups in the 60s and pop stars, whatever, were all military children, children of people yeah. in intel, the military, whatever. And a lot of, you know, what passed for music was a lot of mind control and how that was manipulated. So when I saw that in Sophia's film, about Newtown being loaded with these kind of people, and everybody there, especially around where Lanza's lived, were all new to the neighborhood. You know, it's one of those places where they want to go there supposedly because Sandy Hook was the best school you could put your kid in. And her making connections to Agenda 21. I was like, whoa, what a movie. But I immediately thought of Laurel Canyon, and I said, I guess this might be the new little concave of the military industrial complex's puppeteers and their families. So it did get very difficult to believe any of the story, especially when you got parents saying that they never got to see their dead kid, which I don't understand. And the only time this one couple saw their kid, their daughter, was in a closed casket. I mean, what parent wouldn't say, I want to see my child's body?
Well, it's so absurd, Maria, that we have all these indications that it was fraudulent. We have DHS vehicles in Sandy Hook before the event. We have them taking over the Connecticut State Emergency Communication System before the event. We have no surge of EMTs into the building to rush the little bodies off to hospitals. Mm-hmm. A nice point she emphasizes that EMTs aren't entitled or allowed to determine whether a person is dead or alive. That requires a physician, which means none of those children were properly declared to be dead or alive. And she lampoons the coroner's presentation where he talks about he hopes this won't come crashing down on Sandy Hook, which James Tracy had previously recognized. I mean, the whole thing is a sham. It's unbelievable how blatantly this was done to promote a gun control agenda. It appears to me that the Department of Homeland Security and the NSA are concerned that there are more than 100 million armed Americans. And would you believe, Maria, since this event happened, millions more Americans have gone out to buy weapons for the first time. I have a friend who's been in stores, you know, like a Kmart or a Target where they happen to have weapons, and seen little old ladies never used a weapon before buying shotguns saying that they're not going to take them without a fight.
Right, so in a way it kind of backfired on them, if you think about it.
Well, I think in a way it did.
It was like Obama getting elected. I think the day after he got elected, more guns were sold in this country than ever before. So, you know, if that's their thing, you know, obviously they failed. And, you know, she does make so many good points in the film. All right. It is long. And, you know, there were some very unflattering comments posted underneath it, but I hung with it as long as I could. But when she says it was pretty much a transition town, and, you know, starts talking about, you know, to me, it just looked like a CIA military intel nest is the best way you could put it.
And when you look at those parents who are being interviewed or making statements, they're not acting like
that. No, they're all happy. Right.
There was this one woman all dolled up talking to Anderson Cooper. She was flirting with him. Maria was embarrassing. She wasn't a grief-stricken woman, and the way she was talking about her child was simply ridiculous. Being an angel up in heaven, and she was all smiling and saying how happy she was to be with the other kids and her teachers. It was ridiculous.
I know. Because, listen, all right, maybe the Italian in me might over-exaggerate my reaction to that, but I would be flailing and slamming my head against any wall that I could see if that was my kid.
Any real parent. I mean, none.
Hello?
Houses in that schoolroom until they were removed in the dead of night. I mean, the whole thing was a fraud.
Well, look, now they have the whole place shut down while they tear down the school. You can't take pictures. No one can see it. All the evidence obviously being destroyed. And they don't even want to release the 911 calls. So if they have nothing to hide, why are they doing all of this?
They're hiding everything, and they're destroying the scene of the crime. The consciousness of guilt here, it just reeks from the whole state. And, you know, Eric Holder visited the governor a month in advance, apparently to tip him off as to what was coming. I think the whole thing is absolutely shameless.
Well, you know, one of the other things she said that I hadn't noticed, there's so much I hadn't noticed. I thought I noticed so much, and then I watched that, and I was like, wow, I didn't even notice that, because there was so much that was so blatant. But she does say that the majority of the parents looked way too old to be parents of six-year-old kids.
Right, exactly.
Now, I do know that in today's world, there are women that are having children in their, you know, 40s or, you know, maybe if they're lucky, 50. But that's still not the majority. You know, I mean, I live in a fairly, you know, small community and, you know, I got a lot of kids in my town and most mothers of 6-year-olds where I live are under 30. And I can tell you none of those parents look like they were under 30. Very few looked under 40.
Oh, I know. It's completely unreal. I think Sophia's done a masterful job of laying it out. So I want to encourage everyone to go online and go for Sophia Small Star and Unraveling Sandy Hook and follow it through. You're going to be dumbfounded.
Right. I'm pretty sure I have the link to that, so I'm going to put that in today's show. But, you know, the other thing was, and once again, right in your face, and I don't want to stretch this out because I want to keep the timing on the show tight, is how many of the parents' cars were black or silver SUVs? I didn't even notice that. 90 of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just another, a little more food for thought.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, I want to thank you for joining me today. I'm sure we'll have plenty of crazy shit happen between now and next
Maria,
month.
If I could add one more note.
Sure.
As we approach the 50th, I've actually organized a conference in Santa Barbara for the 22nd that's going to have cutting-edge research. Dallas is going to be locked down tighter than a drum. Nothing new will be happening there. But anyone in the vicinity should check out JFK50SantaBarbara.com to learn more about the conference we're going to be holding in Santa Barbara. And if you're in the vicinity, you might want to make a reservation and get a seat because we only have 200.
Okay, absolutely. I'll put a link to that in today's show. Thanks, Jim, and I guess we'll talk soon.
Perfect, Maria. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Jim Fetzer, check out his work because he was one of the first. And for me, he's like my personal JFK expert. When I have a question on somebody else, Jim's the guy I call and say, who is this person? Is it even worth reading? Thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys tomorrow when Dave McGowan returns.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.